We resume our meeting. We're going to talk about annual improvements to insurance contracts.
Okay. So, at this month's meeting, we have a number of annual improvements that we're proposing you make to IFRS 17. The amendments address places in the standard where the wording is either contradictory or results in an outcome that doesn't reflect the board's intent at the time the standard was written. Those in Agenda Paper 2A have generally been identified through our general consultation activities for IFRS 17, while the issue in 2B was identified and later discussed considering a submission that came to the TRG. Agenda 2B also highlights an area where TRG members did not agree with the outcome of applying IFRS 17 as the board had intended, and for which they suggest that the board should reconsider the requirements in IFRS 17. Such a change would not fall within the scope of an annual improvement, and so we don't discuss that today. As with the other areas where some stakeholders have expressed disagreement with the requirements of IFRS 17, we will ask the board to consider whether any action is required when the board's had the opportunity to consider more complete information about the implementation of IFRS 17. So with that context, let's go into the specifics and I'll hand over to Anne.
OK, so Agenda Paper 2A sets out a number of changes to IFRS 17 that we think should be made as part of the annual improvements process. I'm going to briefly describe each proposed change and ask for your comments and vote on that change and then move on to the next one, because they're not interlinked in any way. So the first change is described in paragraph 7 of the paper, and there we used the term issued in paragraph 27 of IFRS 17 to identify insurance contracts issued as opposed to reinsurance contracts held. And paragraph 27 sets out the requirements for insurance acquisition cash flows. We didn't intend, by using the word issues, we didn't intend to exclude insurance acquisition cash flows relating to insurance contracts in the group that have yet to be issued. That wasn't why we used the term issued. Insurance acquisition cash flows will often occur before a contract's issued, and excluding them from the requirements of this paragraph would largely negate its purpose. So the proposed amendment we make corrects any inadvertent consequences of using the term issued. So does anyone
any
have
any comments? Do we agree?
14.
Okay. The next change is described in paragraph 8 of the paper, and this is on paragraph 28 of IFRS 17, which sets out how to recognise a group of contracts when the contracts in the group qualify for recognition over more than one reporting period. The paragraph again refers to contracts issued by the end of the reporting period, and this time, in fact, it should have referred to contracts that meet the criteria for recognition as set out in paragraph 25 of IFRS 17. We also need to make a consequential amendment sort of related to that in paragraph 24 of IFRS 17. Any comments on that one?
Do we agree?
Okay. The next one is in paragraph 9 of the paper. So here we've got some paragraphs, paragraphs 104, B121 and B124 of IFRS 17. And these set out requirements that for disclosure of reconciliations of the insurance contracts at the beginning and the end of the reporting period and give a revenue analysis. And they identify the risk adjustment for non-financial risk separately. However, some amount of the risk adjustment for non-financial risk could actually be captured by other components that are identified in those paragraphs. We don't want people to double count them, obviously. And so the proposed amendments remove any potential double counting.
Everybody agrees?
Yep. Okay. Right, the next one is in paragraph 10 of the paper, and this is paragraphs 128 and 129 of IFRS 17 set out requirements for disclosure of sensitivity analysis. Here we've just used the wrong term. We said risk exposure when we should have said risk variable, and so we're correcting that.
Do we agree?
14.
Okay. The next one relates to paragraphs 39 and B93 to B95 of IFRS 17 on requirements for insurance contracts acquired in a business combination. They don't explicitly exclude business combinations under common control. We never intended to extend the scope of the business combinations we were thinking about beyond those covered by IFRS 3. Business combinations under common control are a subject of a separate board project. So this amendment just makes it clear that we're not pulling them into IFRS 17.
Agree? Yeah.
14.
The next one is about consequential amendments that IFRS 17 made to IFRS 3, so that the assessment of whether the contracts that you acquire in a business combination, the assessment of whether those contracts are insurance contracts or not, is made on the basis of terms and conditions at the acquisition date, rather than at the date of inception of the contract, as is required previously by IFRS 3. This amendment was intended to apply to business combinations with an acquisition date after the date of initial application of IFRS 17, but the way we worded it, that wasn't clear, so we're just clarifying that.
Do we agree?
Then the next change relates to the scope paragraphs of financial instrument standards, so IFRS 7, IFRS 9 and IS 32. And we, in amending the references in those standards to IFRS 17 rather than IFRS 4, we inadvertently changed the scope of those financial instrument standards, in particular in relation to insurance contracts held. So we are proposing amendments that get back to the scope that we always intended.
We agree.
And the final change is a clarification to Example 9 and the illustrative examples. Example 9 looks at the variable fee approach. It is not possible to derive the figures in Example 9 from the assumptions and the facts given, and that's because we've made some simplifying assumptions and we haven't specified the time value of the guarantee. We get quite a lot of questions asking us why the numbers aren't exactly what you'd expect if you just did what seems like the obvious thing. We don't plan to provide the calculation of the numbers because there are simplifying assumptions, and that's not what the illustrative example is meant to be about. But we do think it would be helpful to indicate what factors we've included, in particular the time value of the guarantee.
Agreed.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
You can be decisive if you want.
And speedy.
Unfortunately.
I have a question I want to ask, if I should raise it now or hold it till afterwards, which is, this paper strictly asks, do we agree with the recommendation to include it in the next cycle of AIPs? I agree with all of these. They're the kind of things that normally we would have discussed on an exception basis. It isn't about the amendments. It's about, should we do them in the AIPs and the timing? Do you want to discuss that now or wait till we have to discuss the next paper?
Let's do it now.
Okay. One of my learning points from revenue and our experience with the TRG and consideration there was that we had a single package of things. We put it out once, and it was all the changes to the standard. Now, they were more substantive than any of the ones we have considered in this paper, but I thought that there were real kind of project management from our side and from our stakeholder side of putting everything related to that standard in one document, considering it together, and weighing the total of the change. And so I have two suggestions that I'd like us to think about, is weighing again the pros and cons of packaging these with AIPs for other standards and other issues, as opposed to holding them to see if there's anything more. And, you know, the next next paper is also AIP, but we have another TRG meeting in September, and I think reporting back after that, rather than packaging them up. And also, I'm not keen on commingling something that's very specific to entities that have insurance contracts for which IFRS 17 is, you know, is an issue, with a bunch of other stuff that, you know, it would not, I think it could confuse both populations. So I'd like us to think again about the plan to put it in the next batch of AIPs that go out. It's not a question about whether they're AIP, you know, qualified. It's just batching and communicating. And I didn't want to take the votes that we just did as confirmation that,
might be
at
useful,
least from my perspective.
It might be useful if the staff give the perspective on why the idea, the proposal is to include them in the AIP package.
So in response, I think, Mary, you're not disagreeing that these are of the nature of the annual
improvements. I think they're AIPs for IFRS 17. And I just wonder if there's a benefit in combining AIPs for IFRS 17 with AIPs.
With other things. I mean, I guess the general approach to annual improvements is that it, by its nature, commingles things which have got nothing to do with it. But what it gives is a single document with a single timing that allows our stakeholders to plan their responses and manage them, particularly given that they are generally not urgent and relatively straightforward. And I think that logic still holds. I see the benefit of waiting till after the September TRG meeting to see if there are any other AIPs which might arise from that. But given we don't generally set a time for when we publish any given AIP cycle, I don't think that that means that we have to have a special IFRS 17 package or not. We can still package all the IFRS 17 AIPs together without necessarily issuing a separate document. I think the point we're trying to make here is that these are changes which are good housekeeping for IFRS 17.
Absolutely, no question about their nature.
And so I think from that point of view, we should just treat them with our other good housekeeping. And that was the logic behind why we proposed doing it in the AIP cycle.
Daryl?
So I think two things. I think we're probably balancing here. As Mary says, I think it is convenient to get one package out if we possibly could and say these are all of... But I agree that something may come out of the September TRG and we might need to consider it. And I think we're balancing the timeliness, getting this out as quickly as possible so people can respond to it and do something with it, with whether that implies one or two. But I suspect that the timing of doing the drafting and the balloting and all that sort of stuff means that we're probably not changing the timetable anyway.
Yeah.
And then in terms of the one AIP versus two AIP project... products, I probably come at it from the other side, to be honest. Do we have enough other stuff that would warrant that going out as an AIP document in its own right? And if we only have one or two of the other things, it seems a little bit odd to be sort of shunting this to the front of the queue and leaving those at the back. I don't think you can answer that now, but I think it's perhaps something that we can think about in terms of...
Trina's got some.
Hello. So in terms of where we are on AIPs, actually we do have a number that we'd be at the point now where we're ready to put out a package as an exposure draft. So I think, you know, decisions you've taken today on the IFRS 17 AIPs could slot into that. And it doesn't affect the timing of that, but neither, I think the timing means that there wouldn't be any particular hold-up as well.
With an industry... following this whole project as avidly as the insurance industry, is there any risk that they will get confused?
At least from my perspective and thinking about, you know, the AIPs and how we do it, these seem to slot very, you know, neatly into whatever we had. And we also, by the way, as part of this AIP package, just last month, we agreed to an AIP on IFRS 16 on an illustrative example. So it's not that there's any sort of confusion, say we only have AIPs and standards that are already in effect or whatever. It just seemed to fit into what we usually do, and the timing sort of fits into what we're doing.
I mean, another point I would make is that while perhaps the preparers differ from from IFRS 17 compared to others, there are a number of people who will comment on this regardless. So the national standard setters, the audit firms, regulators, they will comment on all of these as well. So this seems to be a convenience for them in one way. And on the other hand, at the same time, because we group the AIPs according to the standards they amend, if you want to pull out the six pages or whatever it is that deal with IFRS 17, that will also be easily done regardless of whether we package it separately or not. So I think just in terms of the administrative overhead, it might be...
The other thing that might be important is I think we've tended in the past to think of insurance as being a very specialist industry that only some people are looking at. I think one of the objectives of IFRS 17 is to pull them a little bit into the mainstream. And if I think about users, for example...
I don't see any issue here. Let's get on with it.
Mine was more about the timing and not
the
coming
timing
back
we can
again
consider.
After the...
Okay. Agenda paper 2B looks at another change we propose to make as part of the annual improvements process, and it looks at it in a bit more detail. It concerns the definition of the coverage period, and it came out of a submission to the TRG. So under IFRS 17, the contractual service margin is recognised in profit or loss based on the pattern of service provided under the contract in the group. And the pattern of service is determined using coverage units, and the relevant extracts from IFRS 17 are set out in paragraph 5 of the agenda paper. The proposed change relates to whether in determining coverage units, an entity should consider only insurance coverage or also investment-related services. The staff thinks the analysis of this issue depends on whether the insurance contracts are general model contracts or variable fee account contracts. So as discussed in paragraphs 8 to 12, we think that IFRS 17 is clear that for general model contracts, the only service considered in IFRS 17 in determining coverage units is insurance coverage. And then as discussed in paragraphs 13 to 18, we think that for variable fee account contracts, the board's intention was that investment-related services should also be considered. However, the definition of coverage period is a barrier to reading the standard in that way for variable fee approach contracts. Now, the TRG discussed this issue at their May meeting. The TRG members agreed that both insurance coverage and investment-related services should be considered in the allocation of the CSM for variable fee account contracts. Most TRG members also thought that investment-related services should be considered in the allocation of the CSM for general model contracts. TRG members expressed different views on whether it was necessary to amend the definition of coverage period to achieve that result for both variable fee account approach contracts and for general model contracts for the reasons set out in paragraph 20. So the staff recommend that the board propose a change to the definition of coverage period for variable fee approach contracts to include investment-related services for the reasons that we set out in paragraph 21 of the paper. And we think that that change falls within the scope of the annual improvements process. We do not recommend that the board propose a change to the definition of coverage period for general model contracts as part of the annual improvements process, for the reasons set out in paragraph 24. We think that any such change would not fall within the scope of the annual improvements project. If it's something we want to think about, we need to think about it outside an annual improvements process. And over to you.
Doc. Thank you. I disagree with staff's recommendation. The first point is it's beyond the annual improvement category. I think it's a more significant issue. Because you are going to provide two types of coverage period, and you are going to use variable fee as a, you know, segregating two types of coverage period. But we have not discussed what the appropriate coverage period in when we discuss the coverage period. If we were to create two types, and I don't think variable fee approach is the appropriate criteria to segregate two types of coverage period. Because variable fee approach was designed to have a different calculation method, especially for the change of the environment. But the criteria, scope of the variable fee approach is that those who have substantially invested
related services. So that means even if you didn't meet the variable fee approach scope, there are lots of insurance contracts who have other services, and some of them are invest-related services. So we didn't consider such kind of contract when we talk about the two types of coverage period. So that point was not discussed at the board table. So therefore, if we were to create two categories, then it should be discussed more intensively. So that's the first point. And the second point is your proposal would create outcome of a counterintuitive outcome. For example, the insurance contract, who has insurance coverage of 1 year, but 5 years for investment-related service, then the premium, we say that when you calculate CSM, you have to include all the premium. So in that premium, it includes the price for the investment-related service, which lasts 5 years. But if you say, in general model, the coverage period is only 1 year, then the CSM allocation would be very much counterintuitive. So therefore, I disagree with staff's proposal. That is the second reason. And the third reason is I don't think this proposal would be comfortably accepted by the constituents. I observed the TLG meeting, and most of the TLG member disagreed with this kind of interpretation because of the reason I talked about, the counterintuitive outcome. So therefore, I don't think it's going to be very successful. But on the other hand, there are many TLG member who think they can interpret, you know, like we are proposing. So therefore, constituents may have their own interpretation. I don't think it's an idealistic situation. However, I think we can get on with it. Because if we propose in this way, I would think it would only create confusion rather than the clarity. So therefore, we should live with some vagueness of this coverage, but see how it goes, and then check it at the post-implementation review. That is better.
I think we need to be really careful in this discussion to focus on the two separate populations, the variable fee approach population, which is the focus of the annual improvement proposal, and the general model population. And I think one thing I would... My recollection of the TRG meeting was certainly that most TRG members disagreed with the outcome for the general model, and I think the staff have separated that out and flagged that and Andrea's tee up that might be something we want to look at later. But in terms of the annual improvement topic, we're looking at a much narrower question, which is, given the very specific population that we identified where the variable fee approach applies, was it our intention that the coverage unit concept would extend to both the investment services and insurance services in those cases? And I think for me, it's very clear that that was our intention. It seemed also there were some differences of view, but certainly many of the members of the TRG agreed that we should clarify that that was the case. So they supported, I think, this annual improvement. They didn't disagree with it. And I think it's very much in the nature of housekeeping, very much in the nature of an annual improvement, not that different from the first set of amendments we went through, obviously more substantive, but I think still very clearly what we intended. And I think we were very careful and very clear in defining the population for the general model and for variable fee approach in IFRS 17, and all that this paper is addressing in this instance is, for that population, is that what we meant? Not the broader question of what should happen, where the line should be drawn, or what we should be doing for the general model. And so I certainly support the sort of bifurcation of those two issues and the proposed annual improvement for the question that we've been asked.
to me it was very clear reading this paper that if we that this is a clear mistake in the drafting of the standard, and that if we are not going to correct this mistake, the variable fee approach would be impossible. So I'm really astounded by Tuck's comment that we can leave it as it is, because people will take advantage of unclarity, or you know, can just do what they want. I mean, if you read the standard precisely, variable fee approach will be impossible. There's no other conclusion. We have to fix this, and it is clearly a mistake. That's why it, it needs to be, in a, I think, it's well within the remit of an annual improvement. Martin?
Yeah, I also agree with the staff proposals that we should do this annual improvement, and I think we have really to distinguish between this issue, which is then only related to the variable fee approach. And I think the TRG discussion was that everybody agreed that, okay, that should be read in the way how we now clarify it. Separate from that issue is, okay, how do we define the coverage tunings for the general model? And there was a broader discussion, and some TRG members thought, okay, that we should also maybe can read already, okay, the coverage units also then should include investment service, which I think, if I especially read the basis for conclusion and maybe other board members, cannot agree that is currently the case. But I think that is a different discussion. I think we said at the last board meeting when we reported about the TRG outcome that, okay, there are some issues where TRG members want to change the standard, cost-benefit consideration, other consideration. And we, I think, decided, or proposed at least, okay, that we want to collect these issues and wait until we have the September TRG meeting and then have a broader discussion, I think, in September, October, or whenever, because I think it is difficult now to react on where people don't like the outcome of the challenge standard to discuss step by step or issue by issue. I think we have to collect and then discussing that overall, because most of them are cost-benefit consideration, and I think cost-benefit consideration has to be summarized, and then you can conclude on that. And therefore, I think maybe the second question is a little bit misleading. So it is not that we never, ever will discuss this issue. It will come back when we discussing that in September, October. But I think it's not, I think, kind of an annual improvement, because the intention of the board was differently. It would be a change in the standard for the general model. And that, I think, we distinguish. We now we want to clarify everything, which is a clarification and improvement. And if people want to change the standard, this kind of issues we'll be discussing later.
Exactly.
When we have a better...
I'm very much in Hans and Martin's camp. I think the question for me really is, having developed the variable fee approach, do you then read coverage, do you take the words that are there for coverage units and say that overrides everything we did for variable fee and cancels it out? And clearly that was not our, that was not our intention. So I think the, to me, and this is maybe extreme, the only way you could say there's lack of clarity about including investment services in the determination of coverage units for the general model is wishful thinking and using that drafting glitch in the part of variable fee to say I want to use that to read things in a different way that is wholly inconsistent with, to me, all of the board's discussions around what were the different characteristics of the contracts that we ultimately segregated as the variable fee, the approach we developed, etc. I agree that there's a gotcha on the wording of the coverage units vis-a-vis the variable fee approach, but I think if you stand back and read the standard and you followed it, that there cannot, I struggle to see how it's something other than, I'm going to pick up on Anne's word, what it should say, you know, what people would like it to say or what guidance they would like it to give, as opposed to the primary role of the TRG is to say, is it clear reading the words what the board decided to require? then the question that the TRG has encouraged us by their discussion to consider about whether we should have different requirements than we intended and we set out for general model is separate from the AIP. So, like Hans, I think we've got to fix the drafting so people don't fret about possible conflict between the coverage unit wording and the variable fee wording, even though I think our intention was very clear with respect to both populations, really.
Daryl.
Okay, so not to repeat what I think has been said before, I think for me in this paper there are three elements essentially happening, and I think they were the same three elements that the TRG discussed. It's essentially what does the current definition tell me to do? If the current definition is as the staff have presented in this paper, then does that align with what the intentions of the board were in regard variable fee? And then thirdly, the whole discussion around the general approach and the general thing. On the first one, I think there was a mixed view expressed by the TRG. Now, sometimes a mixed view means that we are allowing a little bit of room for interpretation. But I think what we heard, what I certainly heard in the TRG, was that it wasn't so much that people felt you could do either. It was very strong camps in two different places. And I think that tends to lead to a real problem as a project goes down the route. So I think those very strong views were important in this circumstance. And I think that talks a little bit to Tuck's view that couldn't we just leave it out there and let's see what happens. But I think we have a responsibility here, because I think what you tend to find with standards over the time that they develop is that those views become firmer, and so they solidify more. And I think what we would be doing if we were not addressing this now would actually be kicking this tin down the line only for it to come back and bite us at a later point. That's mixing a whole bunch of things. So I think that would be my view on just whether we should be doing something now. I think on the second one, variable fee, I agree with others who've said that clearly the intent of the board was to recognise that there are two things happening in a variable fee service, and I think the answer we're getting to is appropriate on that. And then I think on the third one, the general model, dealing with the general model issue, the only thing I would caution people is, and it comes back to the example that Tuck gave, I think this is a more complicated discussion, and I think even the example of Tuck is one that we could discuss for a lot longer. I think my firm view is I think we're in the right place, but that I think is a discussion that we'll have further down the line. Yeah.
Also, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think if you could read the current wording as widely as some people say, why would we even have needed a variable fee approach? Right? Yeah. Why did we have all these discussions?
Well, there's two things going on in the variable fee, which is what goes into the CSM and then this how you allocate it. So this is one side, but okay. We still needed the other.
All right. Jungle.
Yeah, just a clarification. Martin said on this question too, on the general model, I appreciate the, you know, your kind of a sacrifice as working as a chair of the TRG. How can you read this
question? You can take that over. Rory.
Could you read this question too? We are going to consider in our future more.
No, if you read question two, I think, okay, does the board agree with the recommendation not to propose? You can read it right. Never ever, or just for this kind of annual improvement. And my point was, I reading this question, for this annual improvement, we will not consider that. But we will not exclude this discussion from the discussion which we'll have at a later stage. That was only my point.
At the last meeting, Chungbu, we promised we'd bring back all the things
so
that you were aware of what we're hearing about disagreements with requirements. I don't see any reason why we would exclude this one specific issue from that general update there.
Okay, just a clarification.
Doug? Thank you. I respect Hans's word. If there is a clear mistake, we should correct it before the effective date. But if it's a simple, you know, a drafting mistake, I think we should do that. But if it's the mistake which could be a little bit more substantive, then we need more substantive discussion if we were to correct it. Then the question is this just a simply drafting issue or much more substantive issue? That is the question. Actually, we are going to create two types of coverage period, and they use a variable fee approach as a criteria to distinguish those two types. But the variable fee approach is the contract which has a substantial proportion of investment service. That means there are a variety of contracts in insurance, but there are contracts which is substantially investment service and getting a fee. So if you are falling into that category, then we have to think about the calculation method of CSM, especially for change of the environment. So we created completely different type of CSM that works. That is our proposal, but it does not necessarily means applicable to the two types of coverage, because there are lots of contracts whose investment service is not substantial, who would not meet those criteria. But there are contracts who has a not substantial but significant proportion of service, and some contract CSM came from investment element, even if it cannot fall into the variable fee approach. So suppose CSM, the ingredient of CSM came from the spread difference of investment services, and then investment services continues 5 years, but coverage is very short, then that insurance, for that insurance contract, they have to recognize all the CSM profit in the first year.
But if we leave the wording as it is, that still would be the case.
Yeah.
Because it only refers to the insurance.
I mean, I think...
Yeah.
So what you would like, apparently, could not yeah. even be considered.
So then what should we do? So we have only two choices. One choice is we have to discuss it more intensively, or we can leave it as it is. And I prefer second choice, because if we start discussing it, it's going to be a substantial discussion, and may our project plan would not be successful, because our effective date is 2021. And if we start discussing it, it would be used as an excuse to extend or defer the effective date. So therefore, I prefer second choice. Because there are, you know, somehow reasonable interpretation. It's not really, you know, use it or it's not over interpretation. For those who have some contract, like I explained, would use a slightly different coverage period. So that is what they understand. Of course, there might be a lot of friction with auditors, but in order to reflect the economics, maybe practice can live with it. So that is what I think.
Tak, if I could come back on that. I mean, I don't think it is a reasonable interpretation of where we are, because if we go back to the principles in IFRS 17, what the CSM is, it's essentially it's the residual unearned profit from the contract.
Yeah,
and, of course, as it's the residual, lots of things go into there. So partly the spread, but also the margin that's charged over acquisition costs, other overheads. Some people think there are claims handling costs or claims handling services in there as well. They also all go into the CSM. And what the principle of the standard is you take that unearned profit,
yeah,
and you allocate it over the period that the services are provided.
Yes.
And we've decided that the principal service of an insurance contract is the insurance coverage, and therefore it's entirely within the principles and the logic of the model to allocate the CSM over the time that this insurance services are provided. Now, we have a variable fee approach, and the variable fee approach was developed to accommodate the fact that in some contracts there's such a significant amount of investment services that we needed to modify the model. And maybe we didn't go right into the details of every consequence, but the principle is that in these contracts you have deemed to be insurance services and investment-related services, which allow you to work out how you modify the CSM when changes in estimates occur. And the logical consequence of that is that you must allocate the CSM over those two types of services as well. And so I don't think it's fair to say that it's a reasonable interpretation that we take other services which we have purposefully ignored in the general model in the standard we have issued. I think if you want to do something different, it is clearly a change to the standard, and we've talked about how we might address requests for changes to the standard in the future. So I think that's why we believe that the general model is something more substantive than an AIP, and I agree that is a substantive discussion that needs more discussion and analysis if we were to justify more standard setting to it. But in the variable fee approach, it is therefore just a drafting error that is inconsistent with the principles and other requirements in the standard, and why I think we must make this change as an annual improvement.
Just a quick response.
Well, let's, because we can have the, you know, the conversation about what does that, I mean, the fact that people are unhappy with the outcome, we can discuss that in September, but it is absolutely clear to me that everybody supports the variable fee approach, and if we want to make that possible, we need to make this change. It's clear as whatever. Martin.
And only to tax point, I think we have a THG, and I think the THG is to help people to implement. And if we get really the, it was a submission from members to the THG, and the THG, there was different views, and I think it is our responsibility then, okay, if it is not done by a discussion through the THG, that we go to the board and clarify that. And I think that is why we have the THG. And if to leave something for everything open, which people have different views, then we don't need a THG. Then we can leave it as it was, and that's maybe in 10 years everything goes to the interpretation committee. But I think that is a typical thing where I think our responsibility is to bring it to the board and clarify that.
Can I see who supports the staff's recommendation?
13-1.
Okay, shall we do one more item before we break?